Are you ready to sell more books? I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm Claire Taylor. If you're ready to get your books into the hands of the right readers
and make some more money,
you've come to the right podcast.
And now it's time to talk tips, tricks, and news to help you sell more of your books. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Sell More Books Show, episode 434. I'm Brian Cohen from Self Publishing Live, joined by Claire Taylor from FFS Media. Claire, we're here. We've actually been chatting for the last hour or so with a meeting and other things. How are you doing on this fine day?
I am doing great on this fine day. I had a good revisions day, and that means the rest of my day is going to be great. Yep. Funny how that goes. And the reason I had a good revisions day, as we were talking about earlier, is that I have not checked my phone today. I got up and took a nice hot shower, got a healthy breakfast, read a little bit of my book, and meditated. And wouldn't you know it, all those things that we know to do actually work.
All those things that we've covered multiple times in the show actually work.
It's so rude.
Yeah. That it's very rude when the things we know how to do and that are right in our face are not done and we suffer for it.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. So yeah, it's a good morning and it's inspired me to do that for the rest of the week because yesterday was not a very good day. So sometimes you need that.
I blame myself for texting you at 9:30 in the morning.
Did you text me today? Yesterday. Oh no, that was yesterday. Yesterday you did. Yeah.
So it's all my fault that yesterday was not good for you.
Yeah, that's really one of the tips of the week is just mute your phone so Brian Cohen doesn't text you at 9:30.
Text you in the morning. Yeah. Yeah. That's on me. Sorry about that. And I definitely think that you're onto something here.
Genius.
I've been thinking a lot about like what I'm going to do with my books and my business going forward. And I always have these thoughts on vacation because I was out at the Outer Banks with my fam and it was great. Though my daughter has been testing the bounds of authority, which has been
good for her.
Good for her, but scampering away from us when we're in an unfamiliar town where we're resting for lunch, it is a little scary.
Not as good for survival.
No, which I brought up with her. So on these trips, I always do think about like, well, what's something I can do differently? And really, really starting to think about when you get to a point where you're selling enough books, where you get to a point where you have a big enough business, there comes a time where it's not just the things you don't want to do and the things that you are bad at that you outsource. At a certain point, you outsource everything but the things that you're great at and the things that you love doing. And that's a hard jump for me. And so I'm working on that, the mentality. My team is, of course, like, finally, oh my gosh, because I'm the bottleneck. And so those are things that I have to get over in order to move the business forward in such a way where we can help more authors. At one point, it was like, the amount of authors we could help was increased by me working myself to the bone. And now it is actively decreased by me not letting go. And that is tough. Like, we're dropping all the truth bombs here in the first couple of minutes, aren't we?
Yeah. I mean, we should just ask each other about our parents at this point.
We don't quite need to go there.
No, I mean, that is a really good point that I think it's one of those things that people don't necessarily foresee is that it's easy to give away the tasks you hate. It's much harder to give away the tasks that you do get enjoyment or satisfaction out of because you have that greater mission.
Right. Right. I get anxious just thinking about it, but sometimes that means you're headed in the right direction.
Yep.
Awesome. Cool. So I was going to announce, this is a teaser, that Self-Publishing Live, which is going to be the one coming up, is in August, later this month. Crazy that we're in August. And that is about email marketing. And then we are announcing that Self-Publishing Live, February 2023. Is coming. And I'm going to announce the theme of that on a webinar this Thursday. So I'm not going to spoil it here, but it will continue. It will go on. And I'm really excited about it. We've been gathering the speakers for it, and they're all very good and have sold many, many books. And I'm excited for them to share what they know with the world.
Awesome.
Yeah. Ba-ba-da-ba. Claire, you got anything going on other than, you know, figuring out life?
No. I'm working on revisions for Reclaim Your Author Career. I have to write that bonus chapter that everyone unlocked at the last second. So that's pushing my production schedule back a little bit, which is fine.
Yeah.
I make the rules, so it's fine. I adjust. And working on revisions for a space comedy that I have been promising my readers, my human readers, for like 2 years, and I'm finally getting it done. So that's been a fun project. That's about all I'm working on. And later this week, I get to figure out how to start recording an audiobook. So that's a challenge.
Hit me up. 9:30 a.m. text.
Yeah. I owe you one.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No, I recorded my own audiobook for the Amazon book. And I think that it went well, but I'm still learning about the process even after having recorded the book. And so I will share all that I know.
That's good. That fresh experience can make a very good teacher.
Fresh, painful wound experience. So let's get into this. Last week's question was, as you put it, mom versus dad. When it comes to the idea of reviewing your old writing, do you feel more like Brian and like the idea? Or do you feel more like Claire and not want to touch it with a 10-foot pole? And why? Aaron Evans said, it took me a long time to learn to be kind to myself when looking at old work. Now I enjoy the challenge of bringing the best I had then to be equal with the best I am now. I like that, Aaron.
And Sunif Hollowell said, hashtag Team Claire, unless I'm going to do something with the information, I won't bother.
Love it. Love it. And Dharma Kelleher said, I went back to read my earlier books to put together a series story Bible, and honestly, I enjoyed it. Could it have been tighter? Sure. But still fun. I didn't feel the need to fix anything unless there was a typo. So we only showed 3 people, and you know, my team was finding these. So of course they made it 2-1, yeah. Brian. But I think that if you check it out over at the Sell More Book Show After Party Facebook group, you will see that I probably lost.
Honestly, I think it was a pretty even split.
Yeah. I'm going to give you the win though.
No, thanks. Because I need it. Because I look like I need it.
Because of that text, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
But let's go do this.
And now on the Sell More Book Show, it's the tip of the week.
Direct respect. Tired of relying on Amazon and other online stores to sell your books? You can take sales into your own hands by selling direct. If you don't know the power of direct selling, check out the latest Readzy marketing email from Ricardo Fayette. Quote, retailers play a crucial role in book discoverability. They're the number one place where readers go to find their next book, says Fayette. But naturally, they take a cut, end quote. With ebooks, the cut is usually 30%. For print, it could be up to 55%. Quote, that can feel like a lot of money to trade for visibility, end quote. In addition to making more money per copy, you own the customer data and control the environment. On your website, the only books that readers will see are yours. Plus, you can track their visits with analytics and advertising pixels, helping you sell even more books later. Quote, direct sales are not for everyone, says Fayette. The great thing about retailers is that they enable authors to reach new readers, end quote. But if a reader has never heard of you, they're unlikely to find your site without advertising. So when should you consider selling direct? When you're established enough not to care as much about retailer visibility. If you want more of Readzy's marketing wisdom, join their mailing list on the Readzy blog.
You know, I've been all about this idea of direct selling for a while, and we're finally getting to the point where we might be launching our Shopify store soon. Kickstarter, of course, is like the gateway to direct sales because you're using a lot of the same kind of concepts. I don't think enough people realize the power of getting the email address when you sell the book. And right. That makes it like worth it in a way, once you've gotten to this point, as Fayette says, to be established enough not to care as much, to be a little more platform agnostic. Could you pay twice as much to get someone to buy the book? Sure. Maybe even more than that. Would it be worth it if you did that over a long enough span and you collected 5,000, 10,000, 20,000? I know of people who've collected 100,000 plus emails through direct selling. That can make a major difference when you release future books. And so there's a lot of promise here.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of nonfiction authors already know this, or if they don't, y'all really want to get on this because this is so much easier for nonfiction at this point. The model is already well established. But for fiction authors, I think a lot are still trying to figure it out, because calculating that lifetime value of the customer, which is what you need to be able to decide if you know it's worth the money to get them onto your list and all that, to get them into your funnel, so to speak, it can be hard when you're selling $4 items.
Right.
It can be tricky to make that math work. And so, you know, I think something like Kickstarter is helping fiction authors think larger than their book on what they can sell and what value they have to offer readers. So as that sort of mindset shift happens and fiction authors begin to, you know, see ourselves more as a storyteller or someone who is creating a fictional experience, then this direct selling is going to be much easier and more profitable for our kind, I think.
Yeah, our kind. Yeah, no, I think so too. I love that Kickstarter is kind of teaching this, because it was 2018 or 2019, Monica Leonel was speaking at Sellmore Book Show Summit and said, there's a gap here. Nonfiction people can sell a $5 book and sell a $100 thing. Fiction can't yet. And this is now finally getting into the author lexicon of what a fiction author can sell for $100 and what now some have. I mean, we've seen TikTok authors banding together on Kickstarter and making $100,000 campaigns so that they can get their super fans to buy bigger ticket items. And of course, we've seen Brandon Sanderson, you know, throw the book out the door with we see what is possible.
Right. Yep. Got to have a big, shiny outlier, or else it's not, doesn't count.
Now, fortunately, there's a few outliers. So yeah, call them, you know, we can say that the median is higher.
But yeah, I mean, looking at the fiction Kickstarters, people are pulling in, you know, $3,000 to $10,000 on books, or, you know, a few books of a new series, or an old series that they're relaunching or doing a special edition of. And that's money that would be hard to come by. Just yeah. if you just put up a new edition of, you know, new cover on the Amazon, you're not going to suddenly make all that money. So yeah, I like the creativity of it. And I hope that selling direct takes off more, because there is a matter of training readers as well. And the more authors who do it, the more likely that customer behavior will start to change.
I know. Like, some of us have to take the initial first step mm-hmm. so that it's better for everybody else.
Who's it going to be?
A few have already, and I hope to join their ranks for sure. Awesome. Tip number two is creativity killer. If you've been writing for a while, you've probably experienced imposter syndrome or writer's block. The two can go hand in hand. Quote, insecurity is a creativity killer, says author Greta Boris for The Author Wheel. When it comes to creativity, negative input is poison, end quote. Some people say writer's block is an imaginary infirmity, but Boris says she's experienced it, as have many others. Quote, we've discovered the best way to avoid the crippling insecurity of writer's block is to stop these things before they take hold, end quote. She says, offering up her best suggestions, starting with not rating your negative reviews or attending toxic critique groups. If the critiques get personal, walk away. Don't compare yourself to others and don't believe the overnight success stories. Instead, find a supportive network whose opinions you trust. Most of all, remember that writing is a learned skill. Quote, like anything, it requires practice, patience, and persistence, says Boris. As writers, We're on a continuing journey to improve and perfect our craft, with the goal that every book will be better than the last, end quote. For more imposter syndrome survival tips, stop by authorwheel.com. This point about not getting negative inputs is so huge. You just brought it up in this very episode, having the phone off, not checking it. Yeah, maybe it prevented some hits of endorphins that would have happened for checking various messages, but it also means social media. It also means reviews. It also means things that you wanted to happen that didn't happen. What are your thoughts about this, removing the negative inputs, or at least trying to lessen them?
Yeah, I think there's an important difference between cutting yourself off from anything that feels bad, like critiques that are helpful, but are negative, because you don't want to insulate yourself from any negative feedback, but you want to be very careful who you get it from, because not all sources are created equal. And you want to make sure that you're doing it at a time when you're ready for it. So I think that's a big part of it, is exercising some control about when you get that feedback and in what form. So, you know, if you're running a small, you know, press, and you have people working under you, you can't run it and say, I don't want to hear any negative feedback about the way I'm doing things. But you can create systems where people can, you know, approach you or write it down. And then at a certain time, you accept it and look at it all at once and prepare yourself. That's how you need to approach your reviews. And that's definitely how you need to approach any sort of feedback on your rating, because it hurts. And you need to make sure that you're in a place where you can sort through the pain and get what's important out of it. So, you know, it's, but generally speaking, there's very little criticism that you need. And obviously, this is, certain types are going to approach this differently. If you already have a strong inner critic, then you really probably don't need to have negative feedback in your life, because you have already given it to yourself.
I'm raising my hand here.
You need a lot less. There are certain people who don't have as strong of an inner critic and can get into a lot of trouble by not hearing the alternate points of view, because they just say, this is what I'm doing, and of course this is the way to do it, and I'm going to, you know, just charge ahead. And then they charge ahead and things have gone wrong and they don't even realize it. So that's, you got to kind of figure out where you're at with that and ask friends kind of where you're at, because we're not always the greatest judges. But so that's my long-winded response is, yes, sometimes you need criticism, but you really have to be careful about where you get it and when.
I like that you brought up the preparing yourself, steeling yourself for the moments where you do need to look at these sorts of things, because if you are looking at them at 9:30 in the morning, instead of having like an afternoon carved out where you already know, maybe you've got a cup of tea, maybe you've got a blanket, and you are just comfortable to be able to receive that information. And maybe you even have an outlet after planned for releasing the frustration and negativity that will inevitably seep in, versus just getting it every time you open an app.
Right. And that's the danger of social media, is you don't know the nature of the comment until you've already read it. Right. So it just, you're just opening yourself up to whatever anyone in the world wants to throw at you. But also, when you're preparing yourself for this, it's important to understand what traps you're going to fall into and what defenses are going to pop up ahead of it. And so that you can kind of subtract those from your reality, right? Like, oh, I know that when I hear criticism, I want to discredit that person. I want to make them look like the bad guy and just, you know, straw man them or whatever. So how do I cancel for that? How do I, you know, how do I subtract that out? So if I start to see that pattern, I can say, okay, let's pretend that this is someone I trust and someone that who I do respect. How do I receive that criticism differently? And we're not talking about just people dragging you on the internet. You never need to see that. But like actual feedback on, you know, from readers, you know, that care about your work, or from friends. And always take a few deep breaths before.
Yes. 100% agreed. All right, tip number three is over to you.
All right, the writer decider. Every time you make a decision, no matter how small, it takes energy and effort. And like the death of a thousand cuts, these small decisions can add up to what experts call decision fatigue. In fact, most of us make so many decisions in our day-to-day lives that by mid-afternoon, we are feeling done. Quote, decision fatigue routinely warps the judgment of everyone, says Ann R. Allen. Few are even aware of decision fatigue, and researchers are only beginning to understand why it happens and how to counteract it, end quote. Decision fatigue is different from ordinary fatigue. You might not even feel tired. You'll be low on mental energy, and you'll get lower with every subsequent decision you make. Decision fatigue can manifest in several ways, but recklessness is one common result that could lead to things like impulsive tweets or choosing television over writing. Another manifestation is mental paralysis. Quote, it's the ultimate energy saver, says Allen. Do nothing. Instead of antagonizing over decisions, avoid making any choice at all, end quote. All is not lost, though. Making a few changes to your daily routine can help, says Allen. First, limit your choices. While all decisions add up, Allen's blog post contains ideas specifically designed to reduce those an author would have to make on a daily basis. Lots of decisions.
We had the one that connected up with you. Now we have one that's hitting real home for me, but it might for a lot of people as well. One of the reasons I'm trying to get out of being the bottleneck of my enterprise is in part because I make a lot of decisions as the person in charge. And so I do run into this frequently. I also find that stepping back, trying to empower other people to make the decisions and avoiding making all of them myself has been really helpful. But that's hard when you're the lone wolf, the one in charge, and you don't have a team like I do. So, Claire, what stuck out to you? I know you've heard of decision fatigue before. What are your thoughts on this?
I heard a tip about this a long time ago. I read it, and it was actually a book for emotional health for law enforcement. And I was reading it, and it, you know, because by the time like a police officer is done with his shift or her shift, they are usually very tired of making a lot of decisions and having a lot of responsibility on their shoulders with those decisions. So then they come home and they flop on the couch or they do whatever. And, you know, the result is that they start to associate dissatisfaction or lack of energy with the home, because that's where they had the crash. So that was a whole other thing. But basically, it was saying that you can make better decisions for yourself tomorrow than you can make in the moment. So that's something that I like to do, is I like to make the decisions for myself prior to the time when that decision is relevant. So in the moment, I don't have to make those decisions. So that's why I plan out what I'm going to do the following day before, you know, I usually plan it out a few weeks in advance. And if I have to, I can make adjustments, but to have that plan already set, it's much, much easier to make decisions for your future self than your present self.
Yeah.
So that can be a way of getting around decision fatigue, is just don't expect yourself to make the best decision in the moment, because you're dealing with all kinds of chemicals. And when we imagine ourselves in the future, we're trying to think of, you know, we tend to envision us at our best, which can get us into trouble in the opposite direction. If we're like, oh, I can certainly write 7,000 words tomorrow, I'm going to feel great. And then it's like, there's no reason to believe that. But, you know, so planning for future self can take some of the load off. And that's my trick, at least.
Yeah. No, I like that. I think it's almost like planning ahead to make your purchases. Mm-hmm. So that you save money, plan ahead to make your decisions.
I can't decide what to eat at 7 p.m. Oh, my goodness. I need to decide what's for dinner in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been the same of late. I've absolutely been the same. All right. Well, great tips there. Knew that law enforcement book would pay off.
I love that law enforcement book. I think about it all the time.
That's awesome. It's so funny how things apply to many different areas beyond what they set out for.
Just some body chemistry stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. All right, let's do the top five. I'm up first. Here we go.
It's time for the Selmore Book Show Top 5 News. Number 5.
Signs of Life. Google Play Books has rested on no laurels since its inception, but now we're seeing signs that developers are working on it. You should see an announcement of some new features in the catalog the next time you log in, writes author Roland Denzel, who saw the pop-up announcement just the other day. The improvements listed are designed to help authors and publishers work more efficiently and includes new sort options for your book catalog, automatic suggestions when you enter search terms, and more precise filter options for books awaiting action. In addition, some of the existing features that often go unnoticed but can be very helpful to those authors with a lot of books, you'll find CSV templates that allow you to upload new metadata to add or update one or more books in your catalog in one go. Note that files containing more than 2,000 books may not process successfully, and I don't think we have a lot of those folks listening to the show. You'll also find an uploader that supports multiple content files at once. You can now upload new or updated EPUB, PDF, or cover image files for multiple books in one step. Sharp eyes might notice options for paperbacks and hardcovers, which some predict might be an indicator that Google could be expanding into print on demand soon. So that is, you know, Roland saving the best for last there.
I know, the king of burying the lead.
Oh my goodness. But we talked about Google not too long ago. Monica had an interview with a person at Google and we expressed, you know, some hesitation. I know I certainly did. But I love that there are updates. There are things being shared saying, hey, we're working on this. There are active things happening. And hey, if Amazon let you update your metadata by uploading a CSV file, well, wouldn't that just make Amazon's life easier? Though, of course, there would be people trying to game the system. What are your thoughts here?
I think this is great. I think Google's finally tired of Amazon being the first search result for every book. And, you know, I think that making it easier for authors is definitely a first step towards making authors want to invest some time in it and invest, you know, personally invest in the platform. So, of course, anytime there's even just a whiff of added competition in this way, it's good news for authors.
What are your thoughts about Amazon not being the only hardcover, paperback, print on demand retailer in town? I know there's Ingram Spark as well, but it feeds to Amazon. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts that Google could get into that game?
That's complex, I think, because it's good, assuming the quality is good, right?
Yes, assuming the quality is good.
But imagine if the quality is bad, trying to get a hold of someone at Google to complain. No.
That's true. We're devil's advocating all over this.
We are. I mean, you don't want to get your hopes up too much. We've been hurt before, but you know, it's good. It's competition. It could, but they'll also probably be using the same print on demand centers that Amazon uses. So it's, right. I mean, it'll be coming out of the same place because there's just that's really where the bottleneck is on printing, is all these print on demand centers or lack thereof. So,
right.
You know, it could be fine. We'll see how it works. I don't know if they'll have like the 2-day shipping that Amazon has, what they're going to do with all that, and if that can remain competitive or become competitive. We'll see. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It opens up a whole can of worms, and right now it's just a setting. It's not something that officially can be done, but I wonder, Amazon has a shipping infrastructure. Google, so much of it is their digital virtual stuff. I do not know what Google would then do. Like, whose network are they going to run off the back of? FedEx? You know, are they going to run off the back of UPS? They're going to have to do something.
Yeah. So I think that's where that runs into an issue. And also, I don't think I know enough about where Google is headed right now, like the larger Alphabet or whatever, you know, that where it is and whether or not this will remain a priority. Selling books will remain a priority. They may give it, you know, a little extra juice right now, but if what do they need for it to do before they call it a success and put more backing behind it or sustained backing? So I don't know enough about that to really be able to forecast how long this movement will last.
All great questions, and maybe some of them will be answered in a later episode of the Sell More Book Show. Awesome. Let's go into number four, and it's yours.
Number four.
Breaking the Mold. Veteran indie author Johnny B. Truant's Reginald the Vampire series is almost here. The cast and crew recently took the stage for a panel at San Diego Comic-Con, and in a rare twist, Truant, the author of the original novels, served as the panel's host, reports Caitlin Bush of Sci-Fi. Based on Truant's Fat Vampire novels, the new show will see Spider-Man's Jacob Batalon break the vampire mold in the role of the freshly turned vamp, navigating an underground world of beautiful, vain creatures of the night. A challenge because, as an eternally overweight vampire, Reginald doesn't fit the idyllic vampire mold. Truant opened the panel by asking showrunner Harley Payton why he decided to adapt his books for television in the first place. Payton had fallen in love with the main character and his journey, the idea of, quote, emblematically learning that inside there's a kind of special place that no one knows about, end quote. Viewers can get a first look at the series trailer on sci-fi.com, and the show premieres on October 5th.
I know that when we see these kinds of stories, it almost isn't about the person anymore. Like, yes, congrats to Johnny. It's a huge accomplishment to have a book adapted into a medium, and it actually gets there. It's not just the rights. The trailer, I watched it. It looks funny. I loved the new Spider-Man movies. So the lead actor getting his own show, the sidekick in Spider-Man getting his own show is great for him. But like I say, it's not necessarily even about the creator anymore. It's about new barrier broken. At any point when these things happen, an indie author is getting a show on Sci-Fi, and it will be here in 2 months. That's exciting, whoever it is. And it's cool that it's someone who's been in the industry for a while. And hopefully, this is the kind of thing that breaks more barriers, that gets more people who have created books in a self-publishing way into the hands of producers, onto the stage, onto the screen, everywhere. I think it's one of those, it's a win for one person, but it's also kind of a win for everybody.
Yeah, it's nice to see indie authors move things ahead and, you know, create the possibility in certain people's minds that indie authors do have stories to share that are profitable.
Yeah. And hopefully those people's minds are producers who then read more indie books and then make more random calls to people about their books.
Contact at ffs.media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Come on, producers. Get up with Claire. All right. Well, moving on to number three. And here we go.
Number three.
Attack of the Pod People. Podium Audio, the rapidly expanding digital publisher of audiobooks, has announced the acquisition of Bookstat, the data subscription service and analytics platform used to track all online book purchases in physical, ebook, and audiobook formats. Podium's acquisition of Bookstat, says the press release, is accompanied by a planned investment to further develop the subscription service's product capabilities and real-time data insights. Authors may not be familiar with the Bookstat service, as it requires book revenues of over $1 million to be a customer. However, the owner, Paul Abbasi, was formerly known as Data Guy and regularly produced author earnings reports before creating the Bookstat service. Today, Bookstat tracks all online book purchases, physical books, ebooks, and audiobooks from industry-leading retailers Amazon, Apple, and Barnes & Noble. Although unlike traditionally published publishing-focused services, Bookstat provides visibility into the whole market and is the only industry data service that tracks all online book purchases at the retail point of sale, regardless of publishing type. Abbasi will remain with the company, working in conjunction with Podium's management as a technology consultant, continuing to lead Bookstat's development and expansion. And a hat tip to Dan Wood, who I saw share this. And I then sent it to Roland, but accidentally sent the same story back to Dan. And so I then chatted briefly with Dan about it. And we both kind of had the same reaction to this story, which is, why is Podium buying this company? And it's really interesting because why wasn't it one of the big five publishers? Why was it a audiobook company that produces audiobooks, that commissions contracts with authors to put out their books in audio, and is in competition with other audiobook producing companies? Why are they ponying up for all of this data and not the big five? That was the big question there. Claire, what do you think? Why are we having this invasion of the Pod people?
I have no idea, Brian. I mean, it seems like the kind of data that it would be useful to have, right? What is actually selling, especially if you're going after bigger fish to try to see, okay, what books don't have audio book contracts yet, or which authors are actually selling significant amounts so we can go develop relationships with those authors. I mean, there are all kinds of benefits. Why Podium got it instead of the big five, I don't know. What did you and Dan come up with?
No, we didn't come up with anything, but we did start talking about other random stuff. But I would say that the thing that you wonder about is Podium going to strictly use this data for their audio platform, for acquisitions, for figuring out what series to continue with, et cetera? Or does it have bigger things in mind? And that's the wonder. Is Podium going to expand into other areas of publishing? I don't feel as though the paperback and hardcover and other stats that Bookstat has would necessarily be of so much use to an audiobook company. Yes, there would certainly be use, but it almost feels like if they're going to take full advantage of this, will this help? The other thing that just popped into my head is Podium trying to get acquired? And by having this, would they have more assets to offer some company?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah. Yeah. What's going on, Podium?
Yeah. Hit us up, Podium.
Yeah. Hit us up. Contact at sellmorebookshow.com, which we did find worked.
It works. It goes somewhere.
It goes somewhere. Doesn't just go into the toilet bowl of the internet. All right. Well, here we go with number two, and it is you.
Number two.
Not a library. The Internet Free Library lawsuit that started about the time as the pandemic is finally going to a judge, and the lawsuit's ramifications could challenge our understanding of copyright, says Pranshu Verma of Washington Post. The lawsuit was filed by four major publishers against the Internet Archive over its scanning and lending of print books. The suit revolves around the archive's practice of lending of print library books under an untested principle known as, quote, controlled digital lending, CDL. While many cite CDL as a legal term, it was in fact invented by a librarian in the 2000s, and this is the first test of its legalities. The Internet Archive legally acquires print books, then digitizes and lends them under rules designed to mimic a traditional library loan. Although they lent books in an unlimited fashion during the pandemic, which was what seemed to bring on the suit. The publishers insist the Internet Archive isn't a library at all, but, quote, a massive copyright infringement enterprise, end quote, and that converting a print book to an ebook violates the author's exclusive rights to create derivative works. Quote, at stake is the future of how libraries are allowed to buy and lend out digital books to the public, says Verma, which advocates say is core to a functioning democracy as technology takes over, end quote. Thanks, Lars Hedberg, for the tip.
interesting stuff. We've covered this before, but now it's actually happening. So they scanned a bunch of books, put them on the internet, rented them out. But not really rented them out, because they just kind of gave them.
They said, here
you go.
We don't need those back.
We got this book for all of you.
Mm-hmm. We did this for you.
We did this for you. Wasn't about us. We did this for you. I mean, this to me, like, I don't care in a way, because I don't think that this sort of piracy, which it probably is piracy, this sort of piracy, I do not feel hurts authors as much as really intense piracy, like getting a book and republishing it, because that's like the worst. And that is something we've seen authors have trouble with from time to time. But this one doesn't feel as bad to me. That doesn't mean that they should be allowed to do it. It feels to me like the whole like Pirates Bay sort of thing, with people just posting videos and posting books and posting whatever. It feels like it's not that different to me. I could be proven wrong, but we'll see what the courts say. Claire, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think that this would have huge implications for copyright law, or it will have huge implications. It could either confirm what we all kind of know to be copyright law, or it could upend it by taking those rights away from the, you know, the publishers or whoever owns the copyright to create different versions of it. That could become a problem with something like exclusivity with a certain retailer, if your books are all over the place. It could become a problem with well-intentioned readers who think they're doing the right thing. Because, you know, there are certain people who are not going to pirate a book because they know that is bad.
Right.
We have done that public service announcement. Readers understand that that is not ideal. But this is a little confusing. It's calling itself an archive. It's, you know, in effect, trying to pretend to be a library. And authors are usually like, we love libraries. Go check our stuff out at the library. We get paid for it. So I think that it could have implications if enough readers don't realize that it's a piracy thing, or that, you know, the author is not getting paid for it. It also has implications for library systems, because library systems have been adhering to the shared understanding of what this means, which is that they buy a certain amount of copies and they actually lend them out. They give them to the person for a limited time, and then the person loses access, and then they give them to another person. So if libraries stop doing that, I mean, how do we get paid from libraries? So there are some implications, but as far as what we can worry about now, it's nothing. We let the big boys duke it out, and we'll see how the chips fall, which is kind of how everything works. So
yeah, I would be surprised if the chips fall on the side that has the major implications, but you never know. You really never know. And you're right. That is why we need to not worry about the sky falling. And we just need to focus on the next thing that we're dealing with. I like it. Oh, it's like a calmer way of being. Okay. I know. And then we're going to have die in the title for the last one. So you just release the panic. Well, here it is back.
Mm-hmm. And now the number one top five news item.
Adapt or die. The world of indie publishing can be so rewarding and so amazing, says author Alana Johnson in her Facebook group. Quote, I know lives that have been changed, but it can also crush you until you're dead. End quote. Those who don't change as markets or industries shift will inevitably die, says Johnson. Are you dying? If so, it's time to change. Quote, I happen to be right in the midst of a huge shift in my business. Usually I don't see it until after the change, says the author. But this time I'm so much more self-aware of my business, end quote. Johnson says that if you don't change in the business, you will die, as many authors do, eventually dropping out of writing and publishing altogether. She suggests a few questions to ask yourself. What am I doing that isn't working anymore? What am I doing that is achieving the goals I have for my business? What have I done in the past that didn't work that might be worth trying again? And that's it. Three simple questions. What are the answers for you? Quote, it does no good to keep watering a dead plant. So if there's something that you're doing that isn't working anymore, question one, stop doing it. So this is great. I mean, Alana Johnson's always got such good stuff. And so if you are doing something that stopped working is one thing, but a lot of authors have done a lot of things that don't work and few things that have. So we've got kind of multiple camps that I think can look at this in different ways, because there's a difference between if you're selling tens of thousands of dollars a copy worth of books a month, and then it goes down to half of that versus $10 and it goes down to $5. So we need to keep all of that in mind here. And there's a lot more people in the $10, $5 camp. Claire, all this talk of death, it's a little scary. Can you cut through this a little bit for us?
Now, in tarot.
Ooh, now I'm leaning
in. I mean, yeah, death and rebirth are very synonymous in, you know, a lot of ways. And so the death doesn't necessarily have to be a painful, well, it will be painful, but it can be followed by something much better. But I think what's not quite mentioned, but very much hinted at in this, is that authors need to check in and see if their goals need to change. Because sometimes it's the goals themselves that are making people miserable, because those goals have stopped being aligned with where the person's energy and purpose is flowing. So we can get attached to our goals and then want to change our whole business to pursue those goals more effectively. But if you don't question the goals, that's where the pain and suffering can come from. Trying to go after something you think you should still want long past wanting it. So for instance, if you are making good money and you're a full-time author and your sales start to dip and they keep dipping, do you adjust your strategy to continue to pursue the goal of being a full-time author? Or have you changed in such a way that it would actually decrease your suffering and your misery to go get a more steady job and make writing a part-time endeavor at this point? So that's really where I think people lack that deeper evaluation that keeps them miserable and keeps them chasing goals that they've outgrown or they've shifted away from. So definitely always question what you are doing and if it's still working for you, but also you have to go that step deeper and make sure that you aren't pursuing something that is no longer right for you or that was never right for you in the first place.
Yeah, I think that really resonates with me, certainly with trying to change my business a little bit to fit the life that I want to have. And I think that for those of us, you know, in that boat, wanting to change your goals to make you happier is an honorable and important thing for a life well led. Let's talk about the folks who never had any sales one way or the other. How does this apply to them who every plant they've tried to grow has died and they are still watering all of those plants?
Mm-hmm.
What should they think about in terms of this?
Well, I think that it still holds that they should think about what they want from this, what massive sales would give them emotionally. And that's really what they're chasing after. And could they get that some other way? Right. And that's the first consideration. But if you have been trying, and you're just not selling any books, like you just cannot get sales, you need to find a teacher. And if you have a teacher, it's okay if that teacher just doesn't work for you.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't mean they're a bad teacher. Sometimes it's just, you know, humans can't be everything to everyone. So it may just be the wrong match, but go find yourself a teacher. If you want to do it, if you decided this is what I have to do and I am not able to do it, you have to go find someone who can help you do it.
Yeah. And Claire, you're saying that as someone who has been taught. I'm agreeing with it as someone who has been taught. I know everyone who has found some success, some semblance of success in the self-publishing arena, they have received teaching. And so I love that you brought teaching back around in there, because not everyone's going to be able to do it on their own.
But you also have to listen to your teacher.
But Claire,
you can't go find a teacher and have them and expect them to do the things for you.
Right.
You have to go and you have to be willing to try something that you wouldn't have normally tried.
Yeah.
And you have to be willing to accept their advice. Listen, if nothing you've tried works, then maybe you're not the best person to be making these calls and you should just do what they say for a little while and see what happens, you know? So I think that's a big problem too, is people go to teachers looking for them to do the work for them or looking for them to just reinforce their beliefs. So yeah. You're not ready for a teacher if that's the mentality you're bringing. And a good teacher will tell you that.
Tough love today in today's episode, even for us, because we've all had a lot on our shoulders based on these stories. So we need a question of the week. Obviously, we've got this story about, you know, kind of where you're at in your career. We've got the Internet Archive. We've got what is Podium doing? We've got all sorts of things here. Claire, where does your heart lie on this fine day?
Let's talk about decision fatigue.
Okay. I like it. Oh, can we disagree on this so that we... Yeah. So that it's one versus the
other. Drama.
Yeah. But I mean, I think we both kind of have the same thoughts on it. Okay. What did you want to ask?
What are some of your strategies for overcoming decision fatigue?
I like it. How do you overcome decision fatigue? Or if you're Team Brian, no, just kidding.
Yeah. Who do you like better, Brian or Claire?
Well, I think I'm not.
I don't want to know. That goes back to the criticism that you don't need to let into your life.
I'm interested in knowing that. Yeah. But the decision fatigue one, you can answer that over at the Sell More Book Show After Party Facebook group or at sellmorebookshow.com. We have a hot potato of wisdom. It's delicious.
I'll take it.
Here you go.
Okay. Here's my wisdom. Do less. Whatever you're doing, do less. This week, see what you can do less of. I have been practicing silence and taking more moments to check in with myself consciously, and it has made everything better without my circumstances changing. So,
yeah,
you don't have to wait for the perfect circumstances, just do less and see what happens. See if you're able to deal with more when you do less.
I love it. Or even not even worry about dealing with more.
Well, right. There's some stuff that you just can't help but address, that it's just, it's necessary to proceed with your life. But, you know, once you've cut out some things, you might be able to handle that better.
Love it. Brilliant wisdom, Claire.
Awesome. Your circumstances are just going to get worse, guys. No, that's not the not the cynicism y'all need.
Yeah, this isn't the rotten potato of
rotten potato of cruelty.
This is the wisdom potato. All right, so Claire, anything you want to tell anybody before we get out of here?
Nope.
Awesome. Well, if you're on my list, definitely come check out Thursday's webinar where I will announce Self-Publishing Live February 2023. The class will be about writing what you love, but with a twist. And I'm excited to share that on Thursday.
I do have one thing that I just remembered. I will be opening up seats for my workshop in March soon. I just have to finish getting that together, and there will be more details. So if you want to come do a weekend retreat workshop on all of the fun stuff that I talk about, keep an eye out. I will mention it on the show for sure, but we will be selling tickets and there will be, you know, payment plans and that sort of thing. So it can be more manageable. So yes, I did want to mention that.
Well, for Claire, I'm Brian. Thank you for listening to the show. We will be back next week for episode 435. Have a great week of book selling, everyone, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Books Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy bookselling.